Kyle Connor, the first of his two goals last night against the Buffalo Sabres. The Winnipeg Jets victorious in Buffalo by a 7-4 margin, improving to 6-0-1 since Christmas. They have not skipped a beat without Mark Scheifele in the lineup. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. Just heard the Manitoba Moose. They fall at home by a 5-1 margin to the Grand Rapids Griffins. So a little bit of hard times for the Moose, as they also dropped the decision last night. Or was that Monday night? Pardon me.
Monday
night. They also lost in overtime. So the Moose, a little bit of a skid, small skid, relatively speaking, but the Winnipeg Jets continue to roll as they did last night in Buffalo. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. You can also do it by a text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. If it's a good text, if it's a text, we might even use it on air. Again, 1290.90 for your text messages. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, good evening to you. A little after 10 o'clock on this Wednesday evening, but it's always bright and sunny and early in the studio with you, gentlemen.
Yeah, good evening. Love the onesie, by the way, Drew.
Thank you. I'm warm. That's all that matters. That's my priority right
it
now.
It is a nice onesie.
Is that I'm wearing a... It's a hockey-related onesie. So that's the important part. Laura bought it for me, my lovely wife. It's a great onesie.
Could the wind be any colder right now?
Yeah, it's only getting colder. So this is just the start.
It's ridiculous. Like, what the hell is going on outside?
Well, the wind has shifted from the north, and it's a strong northerly breeze, and it's bringing in the Arctic winds from Hudson Bay, I believe.
Sean, it was -5 this morning when I went to work. It's got to be at least -45 with the wind chill. I don't know what it is. I don't check the forecast in the winter. I only check it in the spring, summer, and fall, because basically as soon as December hits, it's going to be pretty much cold every day of the week.
The question is, though, Ez, were you wearing gloves?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I was wearing my gloves from Mountain Equipment Co-op.
Okay, good.
Fine glove.
This is very, very
this
warm.
Is, this,
fine
is
glove.
How, this is how we now know that Ezzy's a more responsible member of
society.
By the
way, they don't pay me for that.
I know, because there was a... countless number of times where you would be the dead of winter, you might be out, you know, having a few pops, and no gloves to be found. No hat, no gloves.
But yeah, I won't make that mistake again, because yeah. I almost got frostbite last year, so I made sure that I got the warmest gloves, and it's just too cold. Like, you can't be outside in this weather. It's just ridiculous, but... let's get to the hockey.
We all live here anyways. Last night, the Jets, like I said, 7-4 victors over the Buffalo Sabres. Even though it's a three-goal margin of victory, wasn't even that close. I mean, the Jets at one point in time had a 5-1 lead over the Sabres. They got a little sloppy there towards the end of the second period and the third period. The Sabres got a little bit close as 6-4. Jack Eichel scoring with 5:07 to go in the game. But that was it for the goal scoring from the Sabres. Joel Armia into an empty net made it the 7-4 final. Jets, a very impressive road effort against a weak opponent. They played well. The Buffalo Sabres aren't a very good team, and you saw that last night.
Let's be honest, boys. The Jason Pominville, Jack Eichel goals in the third period were garbage time goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Pominville's goal actually ends up going off of Mason's behind. And, you know, that goal I think Mason would like to have back. And Kevin Owen and I talked about it on the postgame show. The first goal that Jack Eichel scored on a delayed penalty, it was a nice shot, but that's one that, you know, Mason knows he has to have.
Yeah,
but
far side.
Right, but the other two goals were nice goals. And, you know, for me, guys, this is just a situation where you have a much more skilled team against a less skilled team and a much faster team versus a much slower team. And, you know, you mentioned it was 5-1 at one point in the second period, Drew. And, you know, after Connor gets that beautiful goal to make it 4-1, mm-hmm. the game's over, in my opinion. And, you know, this Sabres team, you heard Phil Housley go off yesterday on the Sabres. I mean, this is just a team that at times looks disinterested, because we know the skill is there, Sean, right? With mm-hmm. Jack Eichel, Evander Kane, O'Reilly, Sam Reinhart's a good player. Rasmus Ristolainen is a good, young, skilled defenseman. But at times, it looks like they just they don't really care if they win or lose.
Yeah, and it's interesting because following the game, you listen to the players on the Jets, and it starts with Blake Wheeler. He was the first one we listened to, and he was pretty critical of the team's third period effort. And then you listen to some other audio that comes in. We had Laine and Ehlers to follow, both of them saying not very good third period. So obviously that message was sent, you know, both of them. I re-listened to the audio, both of them saying that we stopped playing. So obviously that message was delivered post-game that this is unacceptable and the effort has to be there for an entirety of the game. And for the most part, we've seen that. And I think it was an important message to kind of relay to the team that down this home stretch, it's 60 minutes all the time for the whole game, give or.
And I think, Sean, a lot of Jets players at that point, after the third period, after the game, they're already thinking about, you know, the day off, the next day. They're thinking about the games coming up against Chicago and Minnesota. They know that they're going to be facing much better teams, right? So you'd rather win that game 6-2, 6-3, as opposed to 7-4 and let, you know, Buffalo have, you know, a little bit of hope there. But I didn't think that Buffalo was going to tie this game up at any point, and it's just a bad hockey team, Drew.
Well, and it starts from my perspective in goal for them. I mean, Laine's shot that opened the scoring on the power play, it's a good shot, but he beats him short side.
It was all about the screen there.
Yeah.
Connor had a perfect screen, and, you know, you're right. I mean, you got to stop that. When you're talking about Buffalo's goal...
Well, Buffalo's goal is horrendous.
Well, I mean maybe he doesn't see it, but, I mean, it's your job to track the puck and make that stop.
The screen wasn't... he wasn't... You know, there weren't seven guys in front of him that Buffalo had to get that shot through.
Brian Little was causing a little confusion in front of the net. But that's a bad goal.
Yeah.
And Nikolai Ehlers, I mean, that's a top corner shot. But, again, if you're in the right position and you're maybe a little bit more out and, you know, cutting off that angle, you know, Ehlers doesn't score there. And that's why Chad Johnson comes in. But we know Chad Johnson's not a very good goalie, and, you know, Kyle Connor scores shortly after he comes in. So you're right, Drew. I mean, if you're Jason Botterill, I think your number one priority probably has to be get a number one goalie, because right now Leonard and Chad Johnson are not number one goalies in the NHL.
Yeah, Jamie McLennan doing the broadcast last night with Dennis Bayak, and he was pretty critical of Robin Leonard on that goal. Said he overcommitted, he left the far side far too open, and Ehlers is a sniper in himself. He sees that corner, and he's probably licking his chops when he saw it, but still had to make the shot. Very impressive. And a shout-out to Patrick Laine, 100 career points.
Yeah, Nikolai Ehlers with his two goals on the game, and Laine with his one goal, meaning they're tied atop the Jets' goal-scoring ranks this season, each of them now with 19 goals on the year.
And we thought they might take it away and give it to Connor, because if you watch the replay, and we slowed it down frame by frame here in studio, and it just goes over the stick of Kyle Connor. It almost looked like it was going to go wide.
This is the Laine goal you're speaking about, the first power play opener. Yeah.
And then they obviously determined that it was Laine's goal, but you know, it's a big deal for Laine and Ehlers, as Sean mentioned. You know, they were disappointed with the third period and the way the game ended. So, you know, at the end of the day, guys, these guys not only want to win, but they want to play well for 60 minutes. It's a cliche, but those individual accomplishments, let's be honest. I mean, Laine is going to score 35 to 45 goals this year. Ehlers is most likely going to score, 30 to 35 goals this year? Their goals are going to come. They want to win, and they want to win the right way.
Well, I think what's most interesting is that prior to Ehlers and Laine scoring last night, Laine had gone 7 games without a goal.
Yep.
Ehlers had gone 8 games without a goal, and you didn't hear a word about it, which I think tells you just how good this team has been playing, because if this team had been struggling, if the Jets had been struggling over their last 7-8 games, and maybe they only win 2 or 3 out of those 7 or 8 games, you don't think we'd be talking about Laine and Ehlers and how they're struggling, and as a result, the team is struggling?
With Mark Scheifele out of the lineup.
With Mark Scheifele out of the lineup, Laine and Ehlers go almost, you know, 10 games without goals, and nobody says a word about it. This team just continues to roll. It continues to get offense from all four lines. You know, Kyle Connor, who I think for the first 35, 40 games of the season, he started the year in the A, so let's say the first 30 games since he got the call-up, had been more of a passenger on that line with Scheifele and Wheeler. Well, he's no longer a passenger. You saw it with the goal he had yesterday. That's a dominant individual effort.
Terrible defense.
Admittedly terrible defense, but that's a guy who now has the confidence to be a goal scorer an individualistic goal scorer in the NHL, a guy who's growing into his role as a bona fide top six player in the NHL who can drive the offense on his own as opposed to have to rely on his line mates to create the offense.
Well, and Connor and Laine had great games after they didn't play much in the third period against San Jose, right?
That's a good point.
So you like how they respond after being benched by Paul Maurice, essentially. And, you know, the Jets now have given themselves a cushion, right? Because St. Louis lost last night to the Florida Panthers. They got whooped by an identical 7-4 score. So the Jets are now 4 points up on St. Louis, and they have two games in hand. Nashville did win, so they remained 3 points behind the Jets. But really, the Jets don't have to win these two games. Obviously, they want to, but even if they lose one of these two games, or even lose two of these two games, you know, they're in a good position right now, first in the Central.
They're in a very good position as they head into their mandated week off, which will be next week, starting after Saturday's game in Minnesota. But, you know, they're taking care of business. They're beating up on weakened opponents. I mean, this is the second time that they've seen Buffalo in the span of about 5 days, and the first game against Buffalo last Friday night certainly wasn't an impressive performance. They hung on to beat the Sabres at home, and then you can see, I think, the evidence that they're such a that they're a quality hockey team in how they bounced back from that average performance against the Sabres by going into Buffalo and really just dominating them and stepping on their throats last night in a game that 7-4, I think, is almost a flattering score when it was 5-1 at that point in time, and really the last 25 minutes of the game was fairly meaningless.
And you see the leadership in Blake Wheeler yesterday. He exemplifies it, going down to block that shot, immediately leaving the ice, and before you can even blink, he's back on the bench. And you know, you see him lying there, and you're thinking to yourself, "Oh no, this cannot be happening right now. Like, how much more adversity does this team have to face?" Back out in 5 minutes. It's impressive what the captain's been doing this season for sure, and he definitely just so happy that he got the All-Star nod today.
Yeah, Steve Mason, we'll talk about the All-Star a little bit later on when you look at the All-Star selection throughout the entire league. Steve Mason, first game action in a while.
Happy for Steve Mason.
You know, he gets the win. I thought he made some key saves at key times.
Early.
The numbers aren't going to look tremendous because, you know, four goals against and everything else. But, I mean, you sort of the context of the numbers is a lot better than what the numbers actually say.
Yeah, the big save was on Kyle Okposo, if you remember. Zemgus Girgensons feeds him a nice pass, and Okposo goes in there and puts a nice move on Mason, and he makes the big save there. So, you know, that could have easily made it 3-2, right? And I mentioned, I thought the weak goals were the first goal by Eichel and then the third period goal by Pominville that ends up going off of his keister. So two of the four goals weren't very good. But again, these are garbage time goals, guys.
Yeah.
It was a 5-1, 5-2 game.
When the game was close, he made all the saves necessary. I mean, he got to be 5-1,
right,
and then everything else that happened.
So what
afterwards
are we talking about? Meaningless goals? I mean, he still gets the win after not playing for 17 days. So overall, I'd probably give him a B.
And he used the term run support at least three times in his postgame interview. So obviously, getting those goals and getting that cushion early allowed him to settle in and play the game that the Jets need him to.
The Jets head to Chicago for a matchup on Friday night against their division rival. We're going to preview that game up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Blackhawks took the Ottawa Senators out to the woodshed last night in the Canadian capital, an 8-2 victory for the Chicago Blackhawks.
You know what's crazy about going 4-for-5 last night on the power play? The Hawks don't have a good power play.
No, they do not.
I was looking that up right now.
You know what's even more? You know what's even more crazy? You heard Patrick Kane. He got, you know, 5 points last night. Finished the game minus one.
That's amazing.
This should tell you all you need to know about plus minus as a statistic, because of course when you're on the power play and you get a goal, it doesn't factor into your plus minus. But clearly he must have given up. You know, maybe he was on the ice for the two goals against. I'm not 100% sure. But Patrick Kane, 5 points and a minus one. So, you know, tells you all you need to know about plus minus there. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Like I said, the Blackhawks winners last night in Ottawa by a
big
healthy
winners.
Margin. You know, it's interesting. You listen to the chatter around the Blackhawks. If you only read the headlines, Joel Quenneville saying disappointed with the team. Brent Seabrook, a healthy scratch last night in Ottawa, back in the lineup tonight for the Blackhawks.
And he scored.
So there you go. He obviously was motivated by the healthy scratch. Mm-hmm. If you read the headlines and only looked at the headlines, you think the Blackhawks were a tire fire, the roof is caving in, everything's chaotic. Well, lo and behold, prior to their loss tonight against the Minnesota Wild, they were in the second wild card spot in the Central Division. So it's sort of interesting when you take the temperature of the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, when their roof is caving in, it's because they're 2 points out of a playoff spot. When a lot of other teams' roof is caving in, it's because they're 2-12-1 in their last 15 games.
Right, and, you know, we have to mention the trade that they made.
Yes, the trade earlier today, of course.
Right, and that's specifically to address, you know, their scoring issues. And, you know, it's not that they're, you know, when you look at their goals for, I believe they're kind of middle of the pack when it comes to goals for.
Let me interrupt you and tell the details of the trade for the audience.
Sure.
In case anyone's missed it. From the Arizona Coyotes, the big name that they acquired is Anthony Duclair. So they acquire Anthony Duclair and defenseman Adam Clendenning.
Who they used to have. Yep.
In exchange for Richard Panik and Laurent Dauphin,
yep,
who they acquired earlier in the offseason from the Arizona Coyotes.
Yep.
So the big names here are Duclair going to Chicago and Panik going to Arizona. But Duclair's a guy who obviously fell out of favor in Arizona. And if you listen to the comments from John Chyka, he sort of drives the bus over Anthony Duclair in his comments earlier today, saying that the player's got all the talent in the world, but, you know, more or less says there's off-ice issues with Anthony Duclair, and which is sort of unseemly for the general manager who traded the guy away to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting to see how Duclair fits in with a talented, veteran-laden, and used-to-winning Chicago Blackhawks team.
Yeah, nobody should be surprised that Duclair was traded, because they've been trying to trade him for quite some time now, and he was a healthy scratch earlier this season.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who a couple years ago had 20 goals in his first full year in the NHL, right? This is a guy who had 99 points in the QMJHL.
Yeah.
So this is a guy that has a very high offensive upside. And, you know, Richard Panik, I think he just scored his first goal in something like 23 or 24 games, something like that. So
he's got 6 goals and 10 assists in 37 games.
And the majority of those goals came earlier in the season.
And he was playing on the top line,
right,
with you know, with Patrick Kane, or,
right,
or with Jonathan Taves
and Saad,
and Brandon Saad. So, I mean, he's given all the opportunity in the world to carve out a top 6,
right,
role with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and I believe the Coyotes are now going to be his fourth team, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Montreal, right? Wasn't he with Montreal, Chicago?
Well, he was drafted by Tampa Bay, then he went to Toronto, and then Chicago. So
okay,
I believe this is his fourth team, not Montreal.
Why do I think Montreal? It's weird. Anyways, go on.
Well, Montreal has had a lot of players. They've been in the NHL for quite a long time. But,
thanks,
I mean, Duclair is a better player than Panik, and he's 22 versus Panik, who's 26,
mm-hmm,
and he has a more favorable cap hit, right?
Yeah.
So Panik signed that 2-year deal in the summer, but they gave him too much dough.
$2.8 million per season is Panik's cap hit, where Duclair's only making $1.2
right.
million, and he's an RFA at
right.
season's end.
And I would expect that, Sean, there's a good chance that if Duclair works out with the Hawks, that they sign him based on his age, and you're probably not going to have to give him a king's ransom. So Duclair is a guy that, you know, maybe you put him on the second line on the wing, but most likely he's going to be a third line winger. But I think for Chicago, you're trying to shake things up again. By the way, the Hawks are eighth in the NHL in goals for, helped a lot by those 8 goals last night. But mm-hmm. I mean, this just isn't
and didn't
the
they
dominant
score 11
team.
Against the Penguins way back at the beginning of the year.
They did have a big game. I'm not
yeah.
sure if it was 11, but it was something like that, 9 or 10 goals or 11 goals.
Yeah, right at the start of the season.
Right, and you know, you mentioned Seabrook earlier, Drew, and how he was a healthy scratch. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous to think Seabrook would ever be a scratch, but we know that Joel Quenneville is a guy that's not afraid to make a move if he thinks it's going to help the team, right? And it obviously was the right move because they got the big win, but...
Mm-hmm.
you know, for me, I think, you know, you need to bring in another top four defenseman there. The depth scoring just isn't there. Patrick Sharp has actually worked out really nicely. Brandon Saad's had a good season. I mean, this team has a lot of talented players, but we're talking about a team that isn't going to be just happy, you know, getting that last wild card spot. This is a team that wants to go all the way. You wouldn't bring Brandon Saad and Patrick Sharp back if you didn't want to go all the way. So even though the Blackhawks, you know, might be struggling a little bit, they've only won, I believe, four of their last 10. I mean, this is still a really good team. And, you know, they've already beat the Jets once this year.
I was going to say, lest we forget the first meeting of the season, a 5-1 victory for the Blackhawks at Bell MTS Place. They scored three very quickly in the first period, I believe three within the first 11 minutes, and it was all downhill for the Jets after that. You kind of saw them fold mentally.
Yeah.
One of the few times we actually have seen that this year.
It was a Friday night game, if I recall correctly. The Blackhawks really did take it to the Jets on home ice that game, and so the Jets obviously, you would hope that they will have that in the back of their minds as they look for revenge on Friday night as try and repay the favor to the Blackhawks in Chicago. I mean, this is a Blackhawks team without Corey Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
So Anton Forsberg and Jeff Glass have been their goaltending tandem.
The best story.
The Jeff Glass story is, of course, it's a terrific story. But, I mean, this is the Jets, the way they've been able to produce offensively, have to look at that as an opportunity. I mean, Jeff Glass is, you know, he's only been in four games. His numbers are nothing to write home about. Anton Forsberg's numbers are nothing to write home about either. The Blackhawks, in fact, losers tonight. They played back-to-back. Mm-hmm. They went into Minnesota tonight and lost a 2-1 game to the Minnesota Wild tonight. So, you know,
and Forsberg played both of those games
back to back, which tells you what, you know, the confidence level that they have in Jeff Glass and the desperation level to some extent that the Blackhawks have as well, in that they went to the same goaltender back-to-back, albeit he probably didn't have a very difficult night last night in Ottawa.
Right, and, you know, it's a good point that you make, Drew, without Corey Crawford in the lineup, because Corey Crawford was phenomenal when he played against the Jets in Winnipeg.
He's been the MVP of the Blackhawks this season.
It's the only reason they're still afloat.
Yeah, and we've talked about this a lot on the show. You know, he's probably one of the most underrated goaltenders of his generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you consider the success he's had in the playoffs with the Hawks. But absolutely, I mean, the Jets right now head in their second best offense in the league, so you know that they're going to want to put some goals past Forsberg. It's not going to be Jeff Glass in net for the Hawks. It's going to be Forsberg on Friday night. But you still got Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook. You know, he's playing with a chip on his shoulder after being a healthy scratch. So it's going to be a battle. It always is when these two teams play.
Yeah, and for people who haven't watched the Blackhawks a lot, you'll see the role they deploy Brent Seabrook in. Even though he's making, you know, just under $7 million a year, he's not that player anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing more in a third pairing role. You know, I spoke with Scott Powers earlier today. We'll play that interview for you on the show tonight. He covers the Blackhawks. They're using Brent Seabrook more in that third pairing role because he's definitely slowed down a step, even two steps, from when he was at his peak. Duncan Keith is playing with Jordan Osterley, who's a rookie who got called up from the AHL. Now he's fit in very well with Duncan Keith, but it's, you know, the idea and the time of Keith and Seabrook together as a pair and they can play half the game for the Blackhawks certainly is not the case anymore in Chicago.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and it goes back to what I said. I mean, as you mentioned, Drew, Seabrook's a third-pairing defenseman now.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan Osterley, you know, is a good young defenseman. He can skate. But when you talk about, you know, those teams that were winning the Stanley Cups, you know, with Nicholas Jalmerson and Johnny Oduya and Keith and Seabrook, and then you throw in Brian Campbell towards the end of his career, I mean, that was a really good group of defensemen, arguably the best group of defensemen in the league. That's why they won the Cup. And now, you know, Jan Ruta, I know they're really high on him, but I think after Keith, the drop-off is big, and really you kind of have a bunch of, you know, number four defensemen. So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Stan Bowman makes another move coming up here before the trade deadline.
Well, you know, the Blackhawks, I think, as currently constructed, to your point, as they're in that sort of the worst place to be, where they're not good enough to truly be a Stanley Cup contender, but they're not bad enough in which to bottom out.
Well, where have we heard that scenario before?
Well, you hear a lot of different teams have that problem. I mean, and their salary cap situation is so difficult.
I would never count the Hawks out just because year after year, they turn it on in the second half of the season.
Except that they've had two straight first-round exits when it comes to the playoffs.
Sure,
I think,
you're right.
I don't
think this team is going to win the Stanley Cup this year. I mean, I think the Nashville Predators, for me, are the best team in the West, and I would say the Jets are the second best team in the West, And after that, I think there's a significant drop-off, to be honest. I mean, some people would have the Blues up there. You know, some people would have the Golden Knights up there. But for me, the Predators and the Jets are the two best teams in the West. But the Hawks have definitely taken at least two steps back since they last won their cup.
Colorado also surging right now, winners of five straight. So
yeah,
and maybe we'll talk- they...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, perhaps that franchise has turned the corner, things moving on the upward trend.
Well,
and
I think the addition of Samuel Girard in Colorado has made a huge
maybe
difference.
Maybe the removal of a certain individual.
A resolution of the Matt Duchene issue, certainly, and as he spoke earlier today with Mike Chambers of the Denver Post, so we'll talk about the Avs in the second hour of tonight's show. When we come back, Kevin Woodley joins us. He covers the Vancouver Canucks for NHL.com. He covers goaltending for In Goal Magazine. We'll talk to Kevin up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. Trying to get Kevin Woodley on the line once we are able to do that. We'll bring him to you here on the program. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you here in studio. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. We're going to talk to Kevin about the Vancouver Canucks. They've certainly been struggling as of late. I believe they're 2-12-1 in the last 15 games, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, hard to believe you'd have high hopes for the Canucks this season. I don't know anybody that would, you know, said that this was going to be the Canucks year or anything. But there were apparently the attitude in Vancouver was that they expected improvement, and they expected to not be a doormat, and that's sort of where they've been as of late after really starting the season with a different start to the season, or a better start to the season that certainly has not continued to manifest itself.
Yeah, they've only won 7 games at home all year.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to believe that, you know, halfway through the season you only have 7 wins. The Jets only have 3 losses in regulation by comparison. And, you know, it's nice to see Brock Besser was named to the All-Star game mm-hmm. earlier today. And, you know, he's arguably the Calder favorite right now, having an absolutely sensational rookie year. But
let me interrupt you right there, Ez. Are you surprised that Kyle Connor's not getting any discussion?
I am.
I mean, I
believe he's second in goals for rookies right now.
Yeah, he's got 15 goals on the year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I know that
top line minutes.
I think
top
some
line.
People don't know that he's a rookie. Really? I mean, I think if you go to NHL.com and you check out the rookies, you'll see that he's a rookie. But I mean, I think, you know, people assume that, you know, he's already played his first year last year,
yeah.
but he's still a rookie. And I'm not saying that that's going to disqualify him, but you know what I mean. I think when people look at, you know, Matthew Barzal and they look at Clayton Keller and we mentioned Besser, that's who they're thinking about in terms of, you know, being the three guys in the Calder race. I think Charlie McAvoy is another guy who has to be mentioned there.
Mm-hmm.
DeBrincat's
having a great year for the Hawks. But absolutely, Drew, I think Kyle Connor has to be in the discussion. I don't know if he's necessarily one or two, but he has to be in the discussion.
Right now, it is definitely between Besser and Barzal, because they're the guys, you know, Besser's up to 40 points, Barzal's up to 39 points. So they're the leading point getters when it comes to the rookies. But Kyle Connor, if he continues to pick it up in the second half of the year, would not surprise me, you know, if he gets his name into the conversation with regard to the Calder Trophy and you know, the other great rookies so far this year.
Yeah, there's no denying the fact that Brock Besser is leading the race with regards to the Calder Trophy. He's just showed an absolute uncanny ability to score goals at such a young, inexperienced age in the NHL already. And if there's one lone bright spot to the Vancouver Canucks this season, yeah. it's Brock Besser, and it's something, at least the Canucks have something to grasp onto. They've got an all-star rookie who's scoring a bunch of goals, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that, and that's about it. They definitely have it's hard to believe at this point, after this many games, that Jake Virtanen's going to turn into anything besides what he already is, and that's, you know, he's a bust. I mean, you're going to say that?
I don't know about him being a bust. I mean, based on where he was drafted,
yeah,
maybe.
Well, based on who they passed
up.
Well,
that's the more important.
But I mean, again, he's young enough, I think, that he can still turn into something, Drew. But the point is, I think we knew that the Canucks weren't going to be a playoff team this year, but I don't think we expected it to be this bad. I think on a night-in, night-out basis, we saw earlier this season that the Canucks were competitive, mm-hmm. but in the last little while, they just haven't been very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's what it comes down to. It's just it's not a very good team, and I think you'd like that compete level to be better.
No, I would agree with that. The it's one thing to be a losing team, because I think everybody expected that the Canucks were going to be a bit of a losing team this year. It's another thing altogether to be as woeful as they've been as of late, and that's the real difficulty that they're running into in Vancouver as it pertains to their Canucks. Do we have Kevin Woodley on the line now? Alrighty, let's get going with Kevin.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine, good evening to you, sir.
Good evening to you guys, and my apologies off the top. Their phone didn't realize it was at 1%, and when I tried to answer the first time, she died. You know what? We all know that feeling, right, where you're panicking, you plug it in, you just keep hitting the power button, hoping it has enough juice to go, and it's one of those end-of-the-night interview problems that you don't run into during the day.
So well, better late than never, so we always appreciate your time, Kevin. We were talking about the Canucks, in the lead-up to you joining us, and how, you know, the expectations weren't that this would be a playoff team, at least I think realistic expectations weren't that this would be a playoff team, but the fact that they're 2-11-2 in their last 15, and that they're 1-7-2 in their last 10, they can't really score. That the woeful performance of the last 15 games, I think, is disheartening for a lot of Canucks fans.
Yeah, and that the 2-11-2 mark coincides directly with Bo Horvat breaking his foot. So, is their depth better than last year? Yes. Is it enough to sustain the loss of their number one center, which he had been from the start of the season? No. And you compound that with the loss of Brendan Sutter, who, for all things, he hasn't been in terms of the expectations coming in and the talk of foundational player from Jim Benning and the salary that came with that, still provided them a pretty good, Travis Green was big into that shutdown matchup option. So without those two guys, it's been pretty bleak. You talk about the goal of scoring, that's been pretty much, the Twins have actually, after a really slow start to the season, picked up a little bit of it. And obviously Brock Besser has rejuvenated at times the power play, although it's in a bit of a funk again. And whether he was playing with Horvat and Berchi, who were both out for Berchi just coming back from the broken jaw, or now with Gagne and Vanek, he's been sort of that lone bright light on this team. In addition to the offense, they can't keep the puck out of their own net, guys. Again, kind of tying to the loss of Horvat, they're bleeding not just shots and into the 30-plus a night, but it's a story you'll probably know well in Winnipeg over the past few years before this season, quality chances, odd man rushes, just too many grade A's, especially for a team that doesn't have a number one goaltender. It's got a couple of, again, parallels with Winnipeg, a couple of unproven 1Bs, Winnipeg last year, who, have struggled to adjust to increased expectations and roles behind a team that needs them at times to be brilliant. So it was supposed to be better. And I guess that's maybe the one thing that will lead to even more questions about Jim Benning's future with this team as a GM who doesn't have a contract asked this year, is we're now looking at a third straight, at best, bottom five finish, maybe even, as the past two have been, sort of bottom two, for a team that isn't trying to be there, for a team that's spending to the cap and trying to be competitive and trying to compete for the playoffs. And that's one thing to tank on purpose. It's another thing to tank when your sworn and stated goal is to be competitive. And it's, like I said, if not for the bright light that is Brock Besser, this would be a pretty disappointing season, especially from the start of December on.
Kevin, right before you came on, we were talking about Jake Virtanen, and Drew was saying that Virtanen is a bust, and I argued with him and said, he's only 21 years old here, let's not call him a bust. This is a guy who had 100 points with the Calgary Hitmen when he was an 18-year-old. So is it too early to say that Virtanen's a bust, and what have you thought of his game so far this year?
I guess it depends how you want to qualify bust for where he was taken. When you look at the comparables, when you look at Ehlers, there in Winnipeg. When you look at Nylander in Toronto, and even beyond that, I think it's too early to say he'll never be, you know, that level of player, but it seems like a reach to think that that's the upside is that high. He's a big body. He skates exceptionally well, and he's got a good shot. But I remember talking even before the draft to a Western Hockey League, you know, a goalie that had played with and against him in the Western Hockey League and in Team Canada functions about how good that shot was. And yet this goaltender said he really didn't think he'd be able to get it off in the NHL, that he didn't seem to know how to get into spots, that, you know, his success in junior was based on just being physically dominant over, you know, other less physically mature players at that age. And so we've kind of seen that, you know, it's not just the media that wonders about the hockey sense here. It's the coaching staff and the management, and they've talked about that. So, yeah, he skates well. The tools are there. But, you know, there's uncertainty. It seems like the physicality that he can be effective with seems to be a chore, would not be the right word, because that would imply that he doesn't want to do it. He just doesn't seem to know when or how to find and pick his spots. And so bust is a strong word at this point. You're right. He's still a young player, and there still is lots of upside. And we've seen it when that power forward mold. Do I think he's Todd Bertuzzi? No. But Bertuzzi was an excellent example of a guy who, you know, that big-bodied, high expectations, good hands for a strong physical guy, and it didn't click for him till he left Long Island and came to Vancouver. Personally, don't see that in his future here, but a lot of people probably said the same thing about Todd when he was playing with the Islanders. So I'm not ready to write him off. He's a really likable kid. He's trying to do the right things. It just seems like sometimes the harder he tries and the more he thinks, the less actually happens out there.
Kevin, I'm curious. I want to pick your brain with regards to some goaltending information. And here in Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuck was named an All-Star today. And I'm curious your perspective on a young goaltender having pretty much his breakout season, going to an All-Star game, you know, such a young age. And if you're for or against, and if what benefits can be provided to a guy in such a young age, just kind of surrounding himself with some of the best talent in the league in that position?
Well, I mean, the positives are it's a nice mid-season reward. And, you know, I can't remember if we've talked about this. I got to see firsthand on the ice and off the ice for a couple different times this summer, one for a solid week at the Net 360 camp that his agent puts on, the work that Connor put in. And it was a lot. And so it's nice to sort of have a mid-season reward. And it's always nice to have that recognition. You know, it is an honor. And to get to go into that room with, you know, guys who are so well established, to sit across from a Carey Price and get to see what he does and see how he prepares and picks his brain. You can always find positives. I think when you're surrounded by the best players in the world and the some of the best goaltenders in the world, there are things you can go in there and pick up. Things that you can take away. Things that might even help you short term, long term. The negative is he doesn't get a break. And the other negative is it is not a very friendly game for goaltenders, let's be honest. You know, but then again, he played in Winnipeg last year, so he's used to seeing some pretty good looks. I joke. But, you have to go in there treating it the right way. I've talked to goalies over the years about that experience. You really do have to just go in there to embrace it as a fun experience. An opportunity when you're young to sort of, like I said, pick the brains of some guys who you may have looked up to, you may admire, guys who maybe this early in your career you never really thought of as, you know, real, you know, straight line peers. But you do, as a goaltender, have to be very careful with your approach. Not that you don't try, but you have to recognize how different it is and not get caught up at all in the results, because it can go pretty sideways in a hurry out there when the best players in the world have time and space and odd man rushes and nobody gives a hoot about back checker defense. It's like shinny on steroids, and that's never a good thing for a goaltender.
It's funny you say that, you know, to have fun with it, because listening to his interview right here, he came on live the afternoon ride today on our station, and he was saying that a guy that he really admires is Pekka Rinne, and that he got the nod also for the Central Division, and that it's going to be a lot of fun to just sit beside him, pick his brain. But also he adds, and I kind of want to throw out a big glove save and kind of get the team and the, you know, the those in attendance on my side and on our team side. So that kind of, is that the right mentality to have, to kind of just go learn, have fun?
Absolutely. And there will be opportunities there. And, you know, like, it's funny because I joke about it being like shinny. And sometimes, you know, in summers, goalies used to play shinny all the time in summers. And we've seen that kind of disappear. Because in order to have success in an environment that wide open, you almost have to cheat from how you would normally play. And if you do that often enough in the summer, those little instances of cheating become habits that can creep into your game once the real season starts, and they can harm you. In this instance, you know, it is a chance to cheat a little bit. On that 3-on-1, if you see that guy hedging past, to load up that push leg and get across as dramatically and powerfully as you can and flash that leather. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't care whether you're in the NHL, and I've talked to guys about this, or me playing beer league or my Monday night skate. We all got into the position for A to be, you know, the sort of that, the guy who never leaves the ice and you're the last line of defense. I think you have to embrace that pressure of your goaltender. But big saves, flashy saves, the kind that get people, you know, out of their seats and cheering for you, of course that's fun. And you're going to have plenty of opportunities to make those types of saves there. And as far as Pekarinen, I didn't realize that was one of the guys he looked up to. He could not pick a better person to want to sit next to, because Pekka is on a very short list of what I consider one of the great, not just really good goaltenders, but great people in the NHL. And stars like Henrik Lundqvist and Carey Price has been this way with us at In Goal Magazine over the years. And Peck is the same. Just truly, genuinely good person who loves goaltending and will talk openly and honestly about it. I mean, Peck is a guy who's having a great year this year after making a couple of significant changes, some of which actually tied to Connor's changes in terms of adjusting his stance and his body position on plays further out, which in effect changes the way he moves on plays and developing rush plays from a distance. He's still the same sort of hunched over, spring-loaded, you know, just kind of reacting out to everything guy when it's in close. But if you watch Pekka closely, you'll see that he has made significant adjustments to his game. I admire that about him at age 35, that he's still looking for those advantages. That Pekka Rinne looks at 5'10", UC Saros, his backup in Nashville, and looks at his success early in his career and looks for things that he can emulate as a 6'6", 6'7" goaltender. So, you know, when it comes to having conversations about the game and picking brains, I think Connor Hellebuck picked a good one, and Pekka's always willing to talk and will probably be asking questions just the same the other way.
Kevin, just a few more questions for you here, and we really appreciate you coming on tonight. You know, you just mentioned Pekka Rinne's age. He's 35 years old. I wanted to ask you about 36-year-old Craig Anderson, and we've asked you over the years about Anderson before, and he got absolutely lit up last night in an 8-2 loss to the Chicago Blackhawks. And for a guy that's been such a good goaltender for so many years for the Senators, he was excellent last year in the playoffs, arguably the team's MVP if it wasn't for Erik Karlsson. What have you noticed in Anderson's game this year? Or, you know, is this more so a symptom of the fact that the Senators just haven't been really good in front of him?
There's no question. I mean, I hate to go to this. It's almost become like my catchphrase in radio interviews. But goaltending never exists in a vacuum. Team play and defensive structure in front of it always sort of affects what goes on in the crease as well. And I'm surprised after just 1 year and how successful that year was, how much trouble they seem to have. And I know injuries have played a role, but how much trouble they seem to have committing, as sort of being as committed to Guy Boucher's system in just year two. That's kind of surprised me. But there is some looseness there that is affecting both their goaltenders' numbers. That said, Craig's such a unique case. He has worked hard in the past couple of seasons to do things like modernize his post play and, you know, add a little more sort of technical stability and positional stability to his game. And yet the thing that's always set him apart and made him, when he's on, as good as anyone, like elite top level guy when he's really feeling it, is his ability to read plays and read the game. And sort of a reactive ability. And you do wonder sometimes, we've seen it with Lundqvist, when he played so deep and relied so much on reactions, he can't do that anymore. he's challenging more and blocking more because he's recognized as he got older, those reactive and instinctual elements aren't quite what they used to be. And so you're tempted because of Craig's age to wonder if that's the problem, if that might be part of it. But I look at it more where, to me, goalies that play on instinct and reads as much as he does are always going to be more prone to ups and downs. And when the defense struggles, obviously, you're not just reading off what the offense is doing. You're reading off where you expect the defense to be. And his style, he's not a technician. There's a lot of flow, a lot of movement, a lot of rhythm. Again, a lot of timing-reliant elements in Craig Anderson's game. And it's really interesting, but if you look at the last 10 years, and I don't have an answer for why, but he was great last season. Look at the year before, kind of average. And the year before that, fantastic. You can literally go back for the past 10 years of Craig Anderson's career, and it is good, average, or below average, followed by exceptional. And it's almost like an every second year pattern. And I saw him early this season. He was playing well, had great conversations with him, and everything looked like it was going to be, he was going to follow up a great year with a great year. But for whatever reason, and team play is definitely part of it, we're kind of back to that 10-year pattern. Brilliant last year and struggling to match that this season. And I guess the good news is, and there hasn't been much in Ottawa this year, is if the pattern continues, you're going to get brilliant next year when the new contract kicks in.
Kevin Woodley covers the Vancouver Canucks for NHL.com. Also covers the world of goaltending for In Goal Magazine. Kevin, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Charge up that phone, Kevin.
I will. My apologies again for being late off the top, guys, but really enjoyed the conversation, and thanks for having me.
All good, Kevin. Take care. Have a great night. Thanks again.
Okay. Thanks.
When we come back, the TSN insiders got together for another round of insider trading. We'll play that for you next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Kevin Woodley for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of that, it's available in the podcast version of the show. Subscribe wherever you get your iPod, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can get it sent to your device each and every week. The guys from TSN's Insider Trading got together for another session. Here's what the insiders were chatting about.
A panel full of insiders, Darren Dreger, Pierre Lebrun, and Bob McKenzie. No Canadian hockey player has ever won World Junior Gold and Olympic Gold in the same year. Is it possible that Cale Makar gets that opportunity?
Well, let's put it this way. I think Cale Makar's name is at least on the radar for consideration for the Canadian Olympic team that will be announced on Thursday. Not by any means a slam dunk, but the fact that he's got a dynamic quality to his game, he could be a power play specialist, the fourth overall pick by the Colorado Avalanche, they're at least giving that some consideration. Now, what I'd be curious to know, to find out, well, how eager would Cale Makar be after being at the World Junior Championship, where he was the seventh defenseman, where he didn't get much five-on-five ice time, and even though he won a gold medal, how eager would he be to leave his school, UMass, and development time there to go for a part-time, what would ostensibly be a part-time role with the Canadian Olympic team? We'll find out whether he's making the grade or not and how he would or wouldn't feel about it later this week.
It's highly unlikely that you'll see any CHL player announced to Team Canada later this week. So we're talking about Victor Mete, who's now, of course, with the Montreal Canadiens. So he doesn't really fit that CHL mold, although he could have been loaned back to the London Knights. And we're talking about Jordan Kyrou of the Sarnia Sting. Kyrou had a terrific World Junior Championship in Buffalo, but there was some concern over whether or not he could handle the physicality on that Olympic stage. But based on the fact that there'll be a heavy KHL influence, that lessens some of the urgency of inviting those CHL players.
That Olympic team announcement Thursday, noon Eastern, you can watch it on TSN2. Victor Mete is going from Team Canada back to the Montreal Canadiens. What role is he expected to play there?
A bigger role, I think, than he had at the very end with the Montreal Canadiens before being loaned out to the World Junior team. Let's put it this way. Part of the conversation, I think, that management in Montreal had with the coaching staff in deciding what to do with Victor Mete was that they didn't feel for his development that it would be any good for him to come back and play 6 minutes a night or be a healthy scratch. Well, certainly, I think when he returns, he'll be a player for them. But the Montreal Canadiens still have another decision to make, I think, later this month on Victor Mete, which is once he appears or is part of the Montreal Canadiens roster for 40 games, that knocks off one UFA year as per the CBA. So another decision coming again in a couple of weeks on Victor Mete.
Mete and Team Canada played some really great hockey in front of some really small crowds in Buffalo, except for that gold medal game. Are there already signs that won't be repeated again next year in BC?
No question about that. Vancouver and Victoria playing host to next year's World Junior Championship, and they have already sold almost 70% of the available full tournament ticket packages that are there. More than 4,000 sold for Victoria, more than 9,000 sold for Vancouver. And put another way, more than 50% of every ticket that's available to the World Junior next year has already been sold a year out.
Evander Kane, former World Junior player, we know he's moving, probably voted most likely to be moved before the deadline, and we now know the price?
Yeah, the price, if the Sabres have their way, will be a first-round pick, plus a prospect, plus potentially a conditional pick in case he signs with that new team. Now, I don't think there's a firm timeline on when the Sabres plan to move Evander Kane, most likely near the deadline, but if a team are ready to pay that price this month, so be it. The Sabres would move him. Now, what's happening, though, is a number of teams that have shown interest in Kane are also saying, we don't know if we're going to be buyers. We have to play out this month, get to the All-Star break, then we'll know. So I think there's a holding pattern there.
Started to feel this week like Jaromir Jagr's departure from Calgary was imminent. Is it not so fast?
Not so fast. I almost believe that he is done in Calgary, but the injury is still significant, and there's a collection of them. He's being treated in Calgary. He first wants to get healthy and then determine what his playing future is. Now, Calgary can try and trade him. Doesn't sound like there's much of a market out there. Perhaps he returns to Europe, but he first wants to get healthy before there is any decision that's being finalized, and that might take some time.
Brent Seabrook, 13 years younger than Jaromir Jagr, but scratched by the Chicago Blackhawks. Are his days as a key member of the Hawks over?
No, not at all. This is not about trying to set up a trade. This is about his performance, and, you know, it's also a message to this entire team that has a high standard and it's in last place in the Central Division. I think he'll be back in the lineup the following game here, but, you know, his minutes have gone down the last few games. He's been on third pairing. He's been off the power play. He has been an up-and-down performer. So, yes, a strong message, but a guy that Blackhawks still believe in very much.
Looks so strange to stare at these standings and see Chicago in last place. Still lots of time, but they got to get in a roll real soon.
That's the latest from the TSN Insider Trading Panel. Pardon me. When we come back, Scott Powers of TheAthletic.com in Chicago joins us.
Let's get you a Halls or something,
just,
Drew.
Started like joking there, yeah. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Our guest now, Scott Powers from TheAthletic.com in Chicago. He covers the Chicago Blackhawks. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Scott obviously brought you on to talk about the Blackhawks, the Jets into Chicago on Friday night to play their division rival. And, you know, Scott, I think there's a bit of a disconnect, you know, in that you read about the Blackhawks and you read about Brent Seabrook being made a healthy scratch and Joel Quenneville very critical with his comments about the Blackhawks recently. So you think that this team is, you know, a bottom feeder, the season's over, the ceiling is caving in, and then you flip on the NHL standings tonight and the Blackhawks are sitting there in a playoff spot, albeit not at the top of the Central Division where we usually see them, but in a playoff spot. So from your perspective, is there a bit of a disconnect between the sky is falling surrounding the Chicago Blackhawks and their actual on-ice performance?
Well, it's difficult because on the ice, it's been pretty up and down. I mean, at times they've been really good, and other times they've been not so good. So, you know, when you look at their record, you know, now they're 21-15-6, and you know, picked up a few wins recently, so they're a little bit more, you know, above 500. But you know, from game to game, they've been a different team, and throughout the season, you know, this is not. I guess it also goes back to that this is not the Blackhawks you expect them to be, and certainly not what they've been in the past, and even a year ago, you know, that they slid pretty easily into a playoff spot, and this year it's been a different story. And and I guess when you look at this, what's happening on the ice, it's inconsistent play. It's giving up a lot of shots, and Corey Crawford kept them afloat for so much early on, and they struggled to score at times. And it's definitely gotten better as of late. But it's Quenneville tinkering with the team in a lot of ways. You know, it's healthy scratching. It's Seabrook. It's you know, every defenseman other than Duncan Keith's been a healthy scratch at some point this season. You know, it was sitting Ryan Hartman recently, Richard Panik, Patrick Sharp. You go down the line, and he's healthy scratched a lot of guys and tried to get more out of them. And You know, they recalled Vinny Hinostroza a month ago, and now he's on the top line. Jordan Oosterly was a healthy scratch for most of November, and now he's being paired with Duncan Keith. So they've tinkered with a lot of things and tried a lot of different options, and finally they're getting it to work a bit. And it also speaks to how tough the Central is. It's it's even where they're at. I mean, they're still looking up at Dallas and St. Louis and Nashville and Winnipeg. And so I think a lot of those things are kind of factor into it. So, yeah, the Blackhawks are playing better, and, they're moving up the standings. But a week ago, they were last place in the Central. And so things have been changing quickly. So I don't know if it's completely as bad as people think, but it's not where the Blackhawks have certainly set expectations for themselves from the previous years.
You mentioned Brent Seabrook, and the eyebrows were certainly raised around the hockey world when he was made a healthy scratch for the Tuesday night game in Ottawa. You know, with Seabrook, he's 32 years old. You take the contract out of the equation. I know it's hard to do that in the salary cap world, but is he now just sort of a third line defenseman? Is that a third pairing defenseman? Is that the role he's best suited for at this stage in his career?
Yeah, I think so. And that's just the reality of it. And again, you know, what he's making at almost $7 million, and how many years he has left. I mean, those are all parts of the equation that fans can't ignore. And it certainly, you know, maybe impeded the Blackhawks a little bit the last couple of years with having to make, contract decisions, and certainly may affect them in the future. But yeah, this is, you know, when he's been placed in a top two pairing role the last, early in the season this year, he struggled, and you know, when you look at the underlying numbers, they weren't great. And then around November, Quinville decided to, you know, take him off the power play, limited his 5-on-5 ice time, put him more in the third pairing, and he's had more success, and the numbers reflect that too. And you know, as of late, he'd seen some more, you know, top two pairing minutes, and put in some defensive situations, and it didn't work out, and I think that's kind of what led to this scratch. But when Quinville's utilized him and kind of set him up for success, Seabrook's been fine. I mean, he still thinks the game. He's been around for a long time. He understands what Quinville wants. He understands the system. He certainly had success, and I think it's more that his body just can't do some of the stuff he used to do. It's just, some defensemen, I guess any player, when you get this age and you've played as much hockey as he has, sometimes you just, you kind of hit that wall, and I think that's what you got here. So I think the positive and what the Blackhawks have to take from this is there have been stretches this season where Seabrook's been utilized in that third pairing role that he's, he's gotten by, and he's been just fine. So it's not ideal considering what you think of Seabrook in the past and what he does make. But again, that's what they probably need him to be from here on out for him and them to be successful.
Scott Powers is our guest on NHL This Week. We're discussing the Blackhawks ahead of the Jets and the Blackhawks on Friday night in Chicago. Scott, you mentioned Jordan Oosterly coming up from the AHL earlier this season. Not certainly a household name. What has he brought to the Blackhawks? Certainly seems like he's brought some stability and found a really good playing partner with Duncan Keith.
Yeah, you know, he's got a lot of versatility. He's a left-handed shot playing on the right, and he has a lot of offensive skill, and he gets pucks through to the net, and you kind of keep up with play, and he moves it like the Blackhawks, like their defenseman too. So, I think it took him a while to get here, and they certainly went through Cody Franson and Seabrook and a lot of players who got a chance to play with Duncan Keith, and the only reason Oosterly probably was given this opportunity is because Cody Franson got hurt in early December, and they were willing to try something different, and Oosterly's really taken advantage of this opportunity. And I think over the last 13 games, he's fourth on the team in points, and he's scoring goals, and all of a sudden he's quarterback in the top power play unit. And it's strange how quickly those things shift. But there's a guy that he sat out, I think it was 13 consecutive games or something like that right before this. So he's I think a lot of teams pursued him. He's a free agent out of the Oilers after last season, and there are a lot of teams that saw his potential, and he thought the Blackhawks were a good fit, and it obviously took some time, but he's been right about it, and he's made a big difference because the power play has certainly been better, and the fact that Duncan Keith has someone that's just been reliable and kind of can get up and down the ice as quickly as he can, I think it's allowed Duncan Keith a little bit more leeway too.
up front, another young player to make an impact, Vinny Hinostroza. He, you know, was back and forth. He spent a lot of time last year with the Blackhawks playing, I believe, 49 games. This year, down in the AHL to start, but he's been up with the team really since the beginning of December. Seems to be finding a groove as he's had points in his last, I believe, 6 games for the Blackhawks. How's he begin to look for the Blackhawks?
Yeah, it's another guy who's just waiting for his opportunity. You know, probably should have made the team out of camp. It was more of a numbers game, and he played well in training camp and in the preseason games, got sent to Rockford and put his time in the AHL, and was close to a point a game there. And then they finally gave him a chance, and he's kind of been, you know, shifted up and down lines since he got called up. And then finally he got a look on that top line, and, you know, Taves and Saad, they haven't been as good as people thought they'd be this season. Part of it was they just haven't had a consistent right winger. Richard Panik was there early in the season, and he went through his struggles. So, Vinny Hinostroza got that chance, and he brings a lot of speed, and he's got some offensive game. And, the big difference from this season to the years past is I think he understands how to use that speed, and he's not overskating the play, and, you know, he's more starting, stopping, and doing all those little things that kind of make him effective. So, he's clicked in with Taves and Saad. You know, he's been able to handle the puck and hold it a little bit and set them up. And he set up Taves for a goal last night in Ottawa, and he's done a lot of that. So he too, like Ostrie, I think they're both tied for fourth in the team in points in the last month here. So both have had a huge impact. But yeah, as of December 1st, neither one of those guys are in the lineup. So. The Blackhawks have found some of the success recently by using guys that weren't seen previously.
Scott Powers is our guest on NHL this week. We're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks. Scott, we know that Corey Crawford's still out of the Blackhawks lineup with his injury. That's led to one of the great stories so far this season, that being Jeff Glass getting his first shot at the NHL after so many years playing overseas and in the minors. Sort of a two-part question. What's the outlook for Corey Crawford and his return to the Blackhawks lineup? And second of all, Jeff Glass, you know, 4 games now in the NHL. Is he over the sort of pinch me, it's a reality stage, and is he beginning to settle into a bit of a groove as one of the Blackhawks' current goaltenders?
Yeah, with Crawford, it's there really hasn't been much news yet. He's been out indefinitely. Even when the injury occurred, no one really knows. He's put on IR after the Christmas break, and when they came back, and he'd played the game before that. So, there hasn't been, he hasn't been on the ice yet, and. Phil Quinville has said he expects Crawford to play again at some point this season. It's just still unknown when. So Blackhawks come up in their bye week next week, so maybe that gives them a little bit more time and kind of figure out a time picture for him. So and then with Glass, he's certainly been an amazing story, and took the reins there for a bit as Anton Forsberg kind of struggled, and they gave Glass a try, and he was, he had never played in the NHL, and, was a high draft pick, and then he went over to Russia and played in the KHL for 6 years and decided to come back and give it a try, another shot at the NHL. And, he's kind of lucky a little bit where, he was the number two even in the AHL, and J.F. Berube got hurt, and so he got called up, and things just kind of fell in place for him, and he carried that opportunity too. And I think they're going to go with Forsberg more often than not going forward. Forsberg's more kind of the technical goalie, and the guy that they see as the number two to Crawford for the next few years. But I think at least Glass is, he's built up a little bit of confidence, and if he gets a chance, I think Quinville and the staff, is able to trust him. And for him, after 4 games and having played in a variety of places, including New York and Chicago, and playing against some good competition and some big crowds, I think it's a little bit less, a little bit less pinch me as it was at first. But it's been a fun story, and he certainly kind of embraced it too, and hasn't really downplayed how significant this is for him.
Scott, we're about 7 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline, and we're used to the Blackhawks always being buyers because they're always close to the top of the Western Conference. They have Stanley Cup aspirations. how is Stan Bowman going to approach the trade deadline this time around? They're not really what you would call a bona fide Stanley Cup contender, at least, you know, despite the at least according to their current record, the talent might be there with Kane and Taves, et cetera, et cetera. So how is Stan Bowman going to approach the trade deadline, given that he's sold so many assets for so long to acquire rental players at the deadline?
Yeah, the more I hear is the Blackhawks are planning to stay put for the most part as of right now. I think, you know, there's two parts to this. One is the Blackhawks are coming off back-to-back first-round exits, and there has to be a thought to win immediately, and Bowman certainly tried to address that this offseason by how aggressive he was making moves. And the second part is the Blackhawks have given up a lot of their future in recent years to acquire, you know, to make runs at a cup. And, you know, you look at sort of trades like Philip Deneau and a second-round pick for Dale Weiss and Thomas Fleischmann. And some of those, you know, some of those trades didn't work out, and Deneau and a second-round pick would certainly be you know, something that the Blackhawks would love to have back at this point. And so that they've had a few trades like that, and they've had trades that have worked too and certainly led to success and the reasons they won cups. I mean, you look at the Vermette trade a few years ago, but I think the Blackhawks are more aware of the future too, knowing that, you know, they have a first round pick going into next year. They don't have a second. Do they want to give up that first? How aggressive do they want to be? Do they have to maybe trade a prospect, someone that they like in Rockford now? So, you know, the more I hear that Bowman's planning to stay put and, you know, just, giving his players in AHL a chance to kind of come up. They just recall Eric Duffenstein and Thomas Yurko, who both played well in Rockford, and, you know, maybe giving them a look, see if they help this team out. But, you know, in most years, he's made a move, and some years are not as big as others. So I imagine he's talking and looking out there, but I think the Blackhawks and Bowman are very aware that, you know, they probably don't want to give up too much of the future for one season.
Last one for you, Scott, and always appreciate your time. On our Saturday show, we had a guest on who covers the Penguins. And, you know, Penguins are sort of similar to the Blackhawks right now. Perennial Stanley Cup champion, Stanley Cup contender. The Penguins, obviously, having won two in a row, the last two Stanley Cups, struggling at the moment, not quite in a playoff spot or battling for a playoff spot, much like the Blackhawks are. And I asked him if the Penguins, brass tacks, at the end of the day, are the Penguins going to be a playoff team? So I ask you the same question. When the regular season comes to an end in the first week of April, do you think this Blackhawks team will have ended up qualifying to play in the postseason?
Yeah, I think they'll fit into a wild card spot. That, you know, I think the way they're playing now, and certainly as aggressive they've been trying to figure out how things, you know, what's not working and what is working, and so I think Quinville's been more apt to explore options, and I think they're finding a little bit more success. And the fact that top two lines are producing pretty consistently now, and you know, Corey Crawford's the key to this too. You know, if Crawford comes back, I think this gives him a better chance. If not, maybe the odds are a little bit smaller, and maybe I'd have to change my mind. But I think if Crawford comes back and, you know, they continue to tinker a little bit and find that consistency, I think the Hawks will find their way into the playoffs. You know, I don't know if that, you know, it's hard to say they'll make a run at it. I think they could be a playoff team as long as they kind of stay on the same pattern as they have been.
Scott Powers covers the Chicago Blackhawks for theathletic.com in Chicago. You can read his work, of course, on that fine website. It's a great job Scott does covering the team, and he's a frequent guest of this program. Scott, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie breaking down the first round playoff series between the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Put it on the board, Drew. Boston-Toronto, first round.
We're at game 42-43 in the season. Leafs have played 45. The Bruins have actually only played 40.
The Atlantic Division sucks.
And their playoff matchups are set. I mean, literally, Boston and Toronto are going to play each other in the first round of the playoffs. The next close, the top three in the Atlantic Division are the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they're going to win the division. They're 12 points up on the Bruins. Mm-hmm. The Bruins are in second at 53 points, tied with the Leafs. The Bruins have 5 games in hand on the Leafs, though. The next closest team in the Atlantic Division, so remember, top three teams from each division make the playoffs, and then the two best wild cards.
Yeah, they're 11 points behind.
The Florida Panthers are 11 points behind the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, the Atlantic Division playoff teams are Tampa Bay, Boston, and Toronto.
Yep.
This is amazing that we are here at game 45, and you already know who your first-round opponent's going to be.
I think it's pretty cool, actually.
I think it's pretty crazy that half of a season is effectively meaningless for three teams in one division.
Well, we've said this before, right? Like, why not just let the top eight teams in the conference, regardless of what division they're in.
Well, get rid of the divisions, is basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense anymore. I mean, this is a worst-case scenario, but I don't think we've ever seen a situation where the bottom five teams in the Eastern Conference are all from the Atlantic Division.
Yep.
Florida, Detroit, Montreal, Ottawa, Buffalo. They're all from the same division.
It's a bad division.
It's a horrendous division. And to have it so top-heavy and have the bottom feeders, they're not even that close to a wild card spot. The Florida Panthers are 5 points out of a wild card spot, and they have three teams ahead of them. So you pretty much know that, barring a significant performance by the Florida Panthers, maybe even the Detroit Red Wings, you know that there's only going to be three teams in the playoffs from the Atlantic Division come April 7th, April 8th. And the Lightning pretty much have the division clinched. And the Bruins and the Leafs are just battling for home ice advantage over the next 40 games.
Yeah, and you know, even though the Lightning and the Bruins and the Leafs have all but clinched a playoff spot, I mean, you know that these teams don't want to take the foot off the gas. And they don't want to let these other teams get into it, right? So, you know, we talked about the Florida Panthers. They're 11 points back. But they're not going to just mail it in. I mean, they're going to still try to win games.
Well, fine, but even if the Leafs
they won
play,
last night.
Yeah, even if the Leafs and the Bruins play 500 hockey.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong, Drew. I mean, I don't think the Panthers are making the playoffs. Like, I apologize
motivated?
To Panthers fans, but 11 points at this point in the season is too much to make up. Especially, you're talking about two good teams.
If the Leafs
and Bruins are good teams.
If you're the Leafs and the Bruins and the Lightning, what's motivating you for the next 40 games?
Well, I think you talked about home ice, but it's also that you're trying to go into the playoffs playing the right way.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you can play the right way over five games, the last five games.
Well, and also,
what do you do for the next 35 games?
And also, it's what I said, Sean. I mean, your motivation is, I mean, you don't want to let the Panthers, you know, crawl back to, let's say, within 5 or 6 points, because then it gets a little bit interesting. So, I mean, you ask any player or ask any coach on either of these two teams, or the Lightning as well, I mean, they're not going to say, oh, yeah, we made the playoffs, you know, we have nothing to play for. I mean, come on. I mean, there's still a lot of hockey to be played. A lot can happen. But don't get me wrong, Drew. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, I think the Panthers or the Red Wings are going to make the playoffs. I mean, it's over for them. I mean, you're not going to make up 11 points on these teams. But, you know, from the perspective of, you know, if you're a Leafs fan or you're a Bruins fan, or, you know, forget being a fan, if you're a coach or a GM of these two teams, I don't think you're worried that all of a sudden the teams are going to go into the tank.
If you're a coach or the GM, I mean, the players are always going to play. And so that's not going to change. But if you're a coach or a GM, you have to hate this.
Oh.
You have to say, this is awful. How am I going to keep this team if your job is motivation? And players are going to play, and they're going to have dips in their concentration and everything else in the course of a season. But you're trying to keep a team motivated that has minimal, I mean, home ice advantage notwithstanding, doesn't have a ton to play for 3 months.
Yeah, but you know what? You could say the same thing about, you know, the Jets or the Predators.
Well, can you?
Because you
close.
Know they're not going to miss the playoffs.
No,
at this point.
You know, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's the same scenario. Because
what does sports club stats say about the Jets or the Predators? There's a 0% chance they miss the playoffs.
That's not what sports club stats says by any stretch of the imagination. I mean,
well, it's less than 10%.
Wow, I think it's actually higher than you think. But you look at, you know, the other teams in the Central Division.
But my point, Drew, sorry to cut
like
you off.
The Dallas Stars are only 5 points behind, 4 points behind the Blues, and 5 points behind the Predators, and 8 points behind the Jets. So, yeah, the Jets have a good, healthy lead, but it's not like the other teams in the Central Division are so far behind the teams in the Pacific Division even. So it's not quite the same thing.
But the point is, if you're the Jets or the – it's not exactly the same thing, but I'm saying if you're the Jets or the Predators, aren't you worried that really you have nothing to play for except for winning the division? And really, winning the division doesn't mean anything. Look what happened with Chicago last year.
I don't think it's the same thing because I think you can still be caught by the teams in the Central Division, whereas you cannot be caught by the teams in the Atlantic
Division. The Jets and the
Predators
can't be caught and miss the playoffs. It's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I think if you look at
the Jets are on pace for what 115 points now.
Yeah, they're on pace for a great season. I don't expect that they're all of a sudden going to drop off, but they know that they do not have the necessary. The teams behind them are still playing good hockey. The teams behind the Leafs and the Bruins and the Lightning are playing horrendous hockey and don't have a hope in hell of catching them.
No, and I agree with you. I'm just saying. I mean, I think overall, you could make the argument that the regular season is too long and is meaningless.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
Because when you get into all you do have to do, and you ask any coach, ask any player, any GM, what do they say? Just have to get in, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Predators are the eighth seed. They go all the way to the Stanley Cup final. So I think you can make the argument on both sides of the coin, and you could say, well, I mean, what does it really matter if the Jets win the division or not?
Sure.
You just have to get in.
You're right. The regular season is way too long. It should be 70 games max. It's not going to change. I mean, don't for a second think that it's going to change. It's not. But the regular season should be maximum 70 games, and the playoff format should be completely changed to make the regular season more influential and more impactful. I mean, you're absolutely right. The regular season is almost rendered moot by the way the playoff format is structured, so that you don't really get much of a reward for finishing top in your division or second in your division. You get almost punished with the current playoff format.
Well, and especially if the NHL adds a 32nd team, aren't you going to have to look at adding more playoff teams? I mean, the league keeps growing, but you stay at 16 playoff teams. I mean, when there were 24 teams in the league, 16 teams made the playoffs.
How many more do you want to add? How much more watered down do you want to make the playoffs? I don't know. We'll find out. Something food for thought, but the Atlantic Division teams, the Leafs, the Bruins, and the Lightning are sitting pretty. The previous segment was brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's Keener Jerseys. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. When we come back, Mike Chambers of the Denver Post joins us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got the full audio. They got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check them out, bernsteinsdeli.com, for more information. Earlier this evening, as he sat down with Mike Chambers of the Denver Post to talk about the surprising Colorado Avalanche, here's the conversation between Ezzy and Mike Chambers.
We're joined by Mike Chambers of the Denver Post on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Mike, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Ezra, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure. We have to start off by asking you about Nathan MacKinnon, who leads the team with 52 points in 41 games. He's almost matched his point total from 82 games last year. What changes have you noticed in MacKinnon's game from last year?
Everything. Confidence. No Matthew Shane. Man, the list is long. He's just a different player. He's always been fun to watch. And you always knew that he had superstar talent, but now he's scoring like that. You know, he's on a great line, too, with Mikko Rantanen and Gabe Landeskog. It's a really, really exciting line, but certainly MacKinnon makes those other guys go. And as you said, he's already matched his goal total from last year, and he just needs a couple more points. And this is a guy who played 82 games last year, and now he's played 41, and he's exceeding what he did last year. So it's quite a turnaround, but you can say that for the entire team, really.
You know, Mike, you just mentioned Matt Duchene, and it's been 2 months since he was shipped to the Ottawa Senators in that blockbuster three-team trade. What impact has Duchene's departure had on the overall chemistry of this franchise, both on and off the ice?
Well, it's all positive ever since he left. And when he was not dealt in, until that time, November 5th, it was uncomfortable in the locker room, even for the media, because you just felt this elephant in the room that, you know, he wasn't wanted there by his teammates, a coaching staff, and he wasn't on the number one power play, and that upset him. And he wanted out of town, and it just wasn't a good situation for anybody. But, you know, MacKinnon started to take off about a week before that trade. And I did a story last week about the comparison. Is it just a coincidence that he started to take off around that time? And he says that it is, and it's just, you know, it just happened that way. But I do believe that a MacKinnon is better off without Duchene. Duchene always thought that he was a number one center, and obviously MacKinnon took over that role. So there was some, I think the two players got along personally, but Matt Duchene's a proud player, and I just think, you know, part of the problem was that he wasn't the number one center on this team, and that's because MacKinnon deserved to be. So, you know, overall, bottom line, it was a great trade, not only to move the player, but all the pieces that the Colorado Avalanche got back in return. So, yeah, it was just good overall.
Now, moving away from the Matt Duchene trade, how would you assess Alex Kerfoot's rookie season thus far?
Well, his shooting percentage, I think, is top two or three in the league at 26% or something. I had no idea the kid was going to be this good. I shouldn't call him a kid. He's 23, and he's got a economics degree from Harvard. He's obviously a smart kid, a pretty good hockey player, too. He's undersized, but he doesn't seem to get pushed around too much. He's just been a heck of a surprise for a team that's trying to go young and rebuild. And, again, his shooting percentage is great. He's played everywhere from the first line to the fourth line. And he seems comfortable at any line. So, yeah, he's been a great addition.
We're joined by Mike Chambers of the Denver Post on NHL This Week. Avalanche forward Mikko Rantanen entered the mandatory five-day break with 8 points in his last three games. He's up to 41 points in 41 games. Is his offensive upside higher than maybe we originally thought?
Well, Ezra, if you think about it, his draft year, he was the number one European prospect. And for some reason, he didn't go until the 10th pick. It was such a surprise to me that he was still on the board. I actually, after the team that picked 9th, I said that the Avs are going to pick this guy, forgetting that Rantanen was still on the board. He was supposed to be a top 6 pick in that draft, and he lasted until 10. So I don't think that it's a shocker at all that how good he's been. He's only 20. His upside is enormous. I think this is a guy who's going to be a star in this league. Everything, and he's a great guy too. He's just the total package. He's a great, high character guy. He's got a great big body, and he's just a great hockey player.
Mike, Semyon Varlamov was injured in that game against the Jets, and Jonathan Bernier had to come in. Of course, that was the game the Avalanche won in overtime, Eric Johnson scoring that game-winning goal. What's the latest injury update on Varlamov, and what's the long-term plan for the Avalanche in net?
Man, that's a tough one. In terms of the injury, they're telling us that it's muscular. Is it the groin? Is that obviously the injury that has hindered him the last 3 years that was supposedly fixed with two surgeries last January, February. I don't know. I the way that the team has handled it in terms of being a lower body injury with a muscular piece to it tells me that it is his groin again. Again, I don't know that for sure, but if it is, it's obviously not good news for this team who still has this guy under contract for two more years. But in terms of long term, no, I don't think Varlamov is going to get another deal here in Colorado. I think his history with injuries is just, you know, it's going to end that marriage.
We're joined by Mike Chambers of the Denver Post on NHL This Week, talking about the red-hot Colorado Avalanche, winners of their last five games. And, you know, I wanted to move to that checking line of Carl Soderberg, Matt Nieto, and Blake Como. We saw this line just last week, and, you know, that line has been largely credited with the Avalanche's improved penalty kill. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is Carl Soderberg was scratched on opening night. He was an afterthought to be a major piece of this team, even though he's making 4.3 for the, I think, the next two or three years. But he wasn't expected to do much. For some reason, they didn't buy him out. But again, he was scratched on opening night. And then Matt Nieto played on opening night, took three penalties, and I think he was scratched the next six games. Blake Como is a veteran, and obviously he was going to play every night. But in terms of this line, it's probably been the biggest surprise of this team because they are a big part of the PK that's been excellent. The Avs killed off every power play, every penalty in 11 straight games, and certainly a lot of that was due because of Soderberg, Nieto, and Como. So certainly it's been a pleasant surprise.
Mike, the Avalanche have had a string of home games here, and they've been very successful this year on the road, but they haven't been able to translate that success on the road. Why do you think that is? Because the Jets, up until maybe the last three games, have experienced that same problem.
Well, I don't know. This is a team that, based on how they've done on the road this year, it's not bad compared to last year. But, you know, they're a good team at home, and I think that's the difference. Obviously, if you can win at home consistently, you have a chance for the postseason. And, you know, home or away, I think that this is a dangerous team either way. I'm not saying that they're going to make the playoffs, but certainly much improved in all aspects.
Mike, if you had to say, you know, what the biggest weakness was right now on this team, is it still on defense, or is it maybe, you know, acquiring a specialty forward? Or what do you think right now is maybe that glaring weakness on this Avalanche team? Right now, I guess, with five wins in a row, there probably aren't as many as maybe you would see, especially last year.
Well, they're last in the NHL in faceoffs, but obviously that's not, you know, a huge aspect. I would say they're blue line still. I mean, they are riding two guys that were claimed off waivers in Barbario and Nemeth. Zadorov has come on. He's only 22. He's in the top pairing there with Eric Johnson. He's been great. But I would say their depth at D, especially on the third pairing, is certainly their main weakness. But, you know, based on how I felt at the start of the season, they're much better than I thought they'd be, but still I think it's a weakness.
I imagine it has a lot to do with how the Avalanche do here in the next 5 or 6 weeks, but how active do you expect Avalanche GM Joe Sakic to be prior to the NHL trade deadline, which is coming up in late February?
I don't know. I really don't. It's interesting. I you know, if they're sniffing the – it's a rebuilding project, right? So they aren't expecting to make the playoffs. But if they're sniffing it, what do you do? I really don't know what Sakic. I tend to think that he's going to be more conservative, and he's going to hold on to his assets and continue here with the rebuild. But again, man, if you're sniffing the playoffs and you've got a chance, you're going to do everything you can to get there. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Mike, final question for you here. The Canadian team that recently won gold at the 2018 World Junior Hockey Championship featured two Avalanche draft picks on defense, Cale Makar, Connor Timmins. The two played prominent roles on the team, with Timmins assisting on the tournament-winning goal. Is it safe to say that the future of the Avalanche defense looks pretty bright?
Absolutely. But this is a team that went, up until this last draft, they went 10 consecutive drafts without taking... I'm sorry, Let me start over. They took two defensemen in the previous 10 drafts in the first round. Duncan Siemens, who was a bust from 2011, he was 11th overall, and Kevin Shattenkirk, who I believe was 14th overall. I think that's been the problem here with this franchise over the last 5 years, is the fact that they haven't taken first-round D. And certainly in 2007, they changed all that. They took Makar at number 4 and Timmons at 32, I believe. And yes, it's certainly two solid players, and I think that they're going to have great futures here in Colorado.
Mike Chambers is a beat writer for the Denver Post. He's a good friend of the show. And, Mike, we always appreciate catching up with you and talking some Avalanche, who are playing really well right now.
Ezra, thanks for having me, man. Take care.
All right, take care, Mike. Thanks a lot. RHCP, baby.
Yeah, a little Chili Peppers bringing us back on Wednesday evening for one final segment here on NHL This Week. It's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. This week at Rumors, Erica Sigurdsson is in town. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. Get them quickly as they're going to go fast. The NHL with their all-star announcements earlier this afternoon. The Winnipeg Jets have two all-star selections, Blake Wheeler and Connor Hellebuck, going to represent the Winnipeg Jets as part of the Central Division team that's in the three-on-three competition for the all-star game. No surprises really there that both Wheeler and Hellebuck make the team. From your perspective, you have to figure that if Mark Scheifele had been healthy as well, he would certainly have been in the running. But Wheeler and Hellebuck, the clear-cut two best Winnipeg Jets to represent the team at the All-Star game.
Yeah, no surprises, guys. And, you know, I would argue that Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers deserve to be there as well. You could easily send five Jets to the All-Star game, but we know that, you know, most teams don't send five players to the All-Star game. So, you know, Sean Assor asked Kevin Woodley about Connor Hellebuck during the first hour. It's great for Hellebuck. Second full year in the NHL, 24 years old. He gets to go to his first All-Star game. I mean, let's be honest, he's having a Vezina-like season. And Blake Wheeler, you know, I argued this yesterday on the post-game show. I think he has to be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy. Some people are saying that Hellebuck should. You know what, guys? Put them both in the conversation. These guys are having special years, so it's great to see both Hellebuck.
Some people are saying that Hellebuck should be in the Hart Trophy conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Vezina. I don't know about Hart Trophy, but Wheeler, I agree with you. And nobody is talking about him, really. I think
Hellebuck is what, second in the NHL in wins?
Yeah, I know, but has he been the most valuable player in the entire NHL?
Well, I mean, that's why, you know, you have panels and, you know, a voting process, but I think he's got to be in the conversation. He's having a heck of a year.
A conversation for Vezina. I'll listen to that conversation.
Hart, why not?
I think that's overstepping a little bit.
Is it not just crazy the fact that we're talking about the Jets having an all-star goaltender right now?
Yeah, something that certainly hasn't ever happened before. You know, the format, of course, is sort of restrictive in terms of how many players each a team can send to the all-star game.
Tampa Bay is sending four, but Tampa Bay's first in the NHL,
yeah,
and they're hosting the game. So right. I have no problem with that, Drew. I mean, Stamkos, Kucherov, I mean, they have to be there. Vasilevsky.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great goalie, and, you know, he's another young goalie that's in, I think, both the Vezina and Hart discussion, more so the Vezina discussion, and especially with Kucherov and Stamkos having those years. Most of the selections I have no problem with.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with it because it's the All-Star game and I really don't care. Each division gets 11 roster spots, and some of those, you know, and of course every team has to be represented by an All-Star. So you have some, you know, teams, you know, Carey Price isn't having what I would describe as an All-Star season, but he's representing Montreal.
Who else are you sending?
Well, that's just it. He has to go because
you're not sending Max Pacioretty.
No, he's going for the Habs because everybody else on the Habs has pretty much sucked this year. I cannot for the life of me tell. I have no rational explanation why Marc-Andre Fleury is an all-star. He's played 12 games.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah,
one.
That's just notoriety.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Vegas isn't being represented. You know, James.
Yeah, why
Neal,
isn't Max Lagasse in the All Star game?
Well, Malcolm Subban.
You know, James Neal is an All Star. You know, so he's got the representation for Vegas. But you have to play more than 12 games to be an All Star. I'm sorry, Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah,
you've been
you on
very
that.
Good in those 12 games, but I mean, Martin Jones, Aaron Dell. If you're just, you know, that's a little ridiculous. You can't only have played, you know, a third or a quarter of your team's games and be considered an All-Star. That's something the NHL probably should revisit. They're not going to. And again, who cares? It's the All-Star game. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, the Central Division went out pretty quickly last year, if you recall. Patrick Laine was the Jets representative, and they certainly weren't too eager to go hard in that 3-on-3 tournament, and I certainly don't blame them. I don't care if the Jets players do well or don't do well at the All-Star game.
You know, guys, another player, you know, that stood out to me, Josh Bailey. It's his first NHL All-Star game.
Having a heck of a season.
Yeah, he's having a heck of a season. You know, so nice for him to go to the All-Star game.
Jack Eichel.
With his line mate, John Tavares.
Yeah.
Jack Eichel, another guy. I mean, he scored 2 goals last night versus the Jets, one of the top players in the league, so... You're right. I mean, with the exception of a few players, I mean, like, is Mike Green at this point in his career really an all-star? But
no.
Detroit's not a very good team, so that's why he's there. But with the exception of maybe 2 or 3 players, I think, you know, most of the players deserve to be there.
How about Johnny Hockey? 4 years in the league, 4th all-star nod. Impressive stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, Johnny Gaudreau's certainly a tremendous player. A guy who nobody's talking about. Representing the Dallas Stars, John Klingberg.
Mm-hmm.
John Klingberg is having a great year on the back end for the Stars and very, very sort of under the radar. He's leading, I believe, all defensemen in points in the NHL.
Well, he's a guy that's had, he's already got a 60-point season under his belt.
He had a down year last year, but to come back and have the impact that he's having this year.
Nobody is talking about the Stars, and you know, they're right in the thick of the playoff race right now.
Yeah, they're certainly in one of the wild card spots in the Western Conference, and you know, they're only 4 points behind the St. Louis Blues right now for 3rd place in the Central Division, and they have 3 games in hand on the Blues. So, you know, the Dallas Stars are a team to keep an eye on over the next, you know, 3 weeks to a month. Would not be a surprise in the least bit if they begin to catch up to the St. Louis Blues, who, you know, struggling a little bit. I mean, maybe their injuries are catching up to them a little bit. The Blues, the Jets and the Predators are separating themselves from the Blues, especially when you factor in the games in hand, because they've played more games than anybody else in the Western Conference.
Drew, another
the
guy,
Louis Blues have.
Sorry, another guy that I wanted to mention. I know we only have a minute or two left here, but Noah Hanifin.
Yeah.
His first NHL All-Star game. He's a guy that, you know, you don't talk about a lot. I don't think many people are talking about the Hurricanes. They're actually not having a bad year this year. And Hanifin's a guy that, you know, you don't hear his name in the Norris Trophy discussion or anything like that, but a really good defenseman, and, you know, nice to see him get his first nod.
And Ricard Raquel gets his first nod. He's the other first-time All-Star. He represents the Anaheim Ducks. He's the only player being sent from the Anaheim Ducks to the All-Star game.
Of weird not to see Getzlaff at an All-Star game.
Well, they've had so many injuries in Anaheim, and that's sort of where their problem has been this year. They're just trying to fight back over that injury bug. I mean, Kessler is still banged up. He's playing on what really looks like to be one leg, and since he had the off-season procedure and everything,
it's going to be tough for them to make the playoffs with the way the Golden Knights and the Kings are playing.
Yeah, definitely. They are a point behind the San Jose Sharks. The Sharks have 3 games in hand. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Big thank you to all our guests, Scott Powers of TheAthletic.com in Chicago, Mike Chambers of the Denver Post, and Kevin Woodley of NHL.com. In case you missed any of this show, it's available wherever you get your podcast. Just download it and get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thanks to producer Chris, doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We remind you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.